How fun is this?
Why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline. Why can't you be true?
Popping like a...
You just started doing the things you used to do.
My head's popping up and down like popcorn.
So I was motivating over the hill. I saw Maybelline in a coupe de ville. A Cadillac rolling on an open road. Nothing out run my VA4. A Cadillac doing about 95. Bumper to bumper rolling side to side. Maybelline. Why can't you be true?
Chuck Berry passed away over the weekend, and we're still talking about it this afternoon here on WGN. John Williams at 138, Jim DeRogatis joins us, rock critic for the Chicago Sun-Times. Hey, Jim, it's John Williams. How are you?
John, it's a real pleasure to be talking to you again.
Yeah, we haven't visited in a while. Are you still at South by Southwest, or is that over now?
No, I got back on the weekend, and I've been dealing with Chuck Berry ever since.
So what should we do first? Because I do want to talk to you about South by Southwest. You want to do Chuck Berry first or South by Southwest first?
Yeah, let's talk about Chuck. I mean, there is no South by Southwest. There is no rock and roll whatsoever, John, without the sounds that Chuck recorded at 2120 South Michigan, including Maybelline there.
You know, I understand, and yet I don't always see the connection. When I listen to Chuck Berry, it doesn't sound to me like what I call rock and roll, at least not these days.
Oh, well, there's a couple of things, John. I mean, number one, let's not forget Jerry Lee Lewis and Fats Domino. It was not a given in the early days of rock and roll that the guitar would be the main instrument. So, you know, from that alone and from the way he made guitar both rhythm and lead instrument in rock and roll, you know, a significant accomplishment. And, you know, if you talk about the Beatles and the Stones and the Beach Boys and everything that followed, you know, the Ramones, Kraftwerk, the German synthesizer band, was trying to do Chuck Berry songs on a Moog synthesizer and succeeding. You know, Berry wrote about tooling around St. Louis, and they wrote about driving on the Autobahn. So, you know, the model is so basic that we forget it. But also the idea that two other things, that, you know, he was an auteur. He wrote his own material. The blues greats that recorded at that same studio, 2120 South Michigan, you know, recording songs by Willie Dixon, you know, or traditional songs. You know, Chuck was writing and performing and recording his own material. So there was that model 10 years before it would become standard for the Beach Boys and the Beatles. And finally, there's the lyrics, you know, the idea that this is a generational music and you may not understand it. Roll over, Beethoven. This is not for you. This is something new. You know, the old folks can tell. You never can tell. You know what I mean? C'est la vie, say the old folks. You never can tell. You know, old folks. No, that's not us. We're a new generation. We have a new sound.
Yeah.
And this is the sound.
Well, I guess so. And, you know, not having been there during the transformation, I guess it's hard for me to today imagine it as transformative or disruptive because we sort of take it for granted. This is what rock and roll sounds like. The guitar is the lead, and Chuck Berry's this guy who had something to do with it.
I teach a course at Columbia College for 200 freshmen called Music and Media in Chicago, and we look at the music recorded here and some of the media greats. And when I play them Chuck Berry, they're shocked. You know, in their head, it's happy days, nostalgia music, right? But I play them a performance clip of Roll Over Beethoven, and the wink and the leer and the kind of postmodern, we are conspiring together. Chuck is dangerous and sexy and conspiratorial, and he scares them a little bit, which is makes me very happy for an 18-year-old today raised on the Wu-Tang Clan to be you know, frightened a little bit, see a little bit of that frisson that first-generation rock and roll had, because we clean it up and we sanitize it, and Chuck Berry was electrifying. And, you know, for an African-American man to be doing this in the mid-50s, and his period continued after he had some problems, he was still pretty great through much of the 60s when he came back from prison after serving for the Mann Act, bringing teenage girls. Sweet little 16, a little too close to truth for Chuck. Almost a little R. Kelly there, later a
I'll talk to you about that in just a second, but then one other question just about his making rock and roll what it is today, or or maybe being one of the pillars. Was his greatest gift then that vision, or, you know, that he had a different idea for music, or was it his craftsmanship? Was he just such a great guitar player that people were going to follow wherever he led, you know?
I think it's all of the above. All of the above and more. He was also an incredible showman. You know, that duck walk and the onstage performance and his entire persona. You know, and it was a little gangster, you know. It was gangster rap, you know, 4 decades before. Chuck would infamously walk into a venue and refuse to perform a note with a pickup band who he never met and expected to know his songs, without getting paid in a suitcase full of cash. It was cash only, and it was pay me now or I walk.
Yeah,
you know,
which got him into trouble. Let's just talk a little bit about his personal life. He was born in St. Louis. He obviously finally found his way to Chicago, but why was he always running afoul of the law? He had 3 tours in jail.
I think, I think partly it was the times. For an African-American man to be as successful, as wealthy, as celebrated, as famous as he was, I wrote a book about the rock critic Lester Bangs, who really was the second generation of rock critics. And, you know, there was no serious writing, John, about rock and roll for its entire first decade. It was not until Sgt. Pepper in 67. But none of the music of the 50s was written about seriously. There were two kinds of writing. There were fan magazines that published the lyrics and pictures, but only for the white artists, not the black artists, not Little Richard and not Berry, not Bo Diddley, Elvis. And then there were, you know, newspaper stories that said this was a juvenile delinquent scourge. So this music wasn't taken seriously as a cultural force at the time, which was probably a good thing. It made it all the more our secret. You know, this is ours.
Right.
So I think he was a target. I think he had a target on his back for police officers.
Well, what happened with this man acting? So did he? What was his relationship like with that 14-year-old girl?
There were groupies that he was transporting across state lines, putting on his tour bus.
Sorry. So what happened on the tour bus?
What do you mean? He was having his way with an underage girl.
I mean, that's statutory then, right?
Yeah. But I don't know if they could prove that. I think they only proved the Mann Act that he had brought her across state lines.
Well, in that case, that could have gone a lot worse for him. Today, he would not be out of jail.
There are a lot of people who apologize for the groupie culture. I'm not one of them because there's a power discrepancy. It's not much different than a high school teacher. You know, there's that case going on right now in Tennessee.
Sure.
High school teacher bringing a freshman, running away with her, right? I think more troubling is later in life in the last decade and a half. You know, he paid more than $100 million to people who sued him. He had installed video cameras in the bathrooms of his restaurant to film women going about their business. That's disturbing. You know, Chuck was not a nice man.
Yeah. Maybe that's the way geniuses come, packaged with all of these sorts of conflicts and contradictions. But did you say $100 million?
Yeah, I believe it was like $112 million.
He made that much money in his career, or generated that much revenue.
Yeah, because he was smart. I think, unlike others, he was able to hold on to it. That pay me in cash in the suitcase up front thing. Whether he ever managed to collect from Chess, the famous Cadillac Records label, we'll buy you a car, but we're not going to pay you your royalties, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of different, there are different takes on the history of Chess Records.
What about the My Ding-a-ling song?
Yeah, well, late in his career, he's phoning that in. I think you have to.
But that was his biggest hit, right? I mean, at least on I believe that's the only song he had that went to number one.
Oh, no. It depends on how you define number one. Let's remember that rock and roll was segregated for 15 years. Huh. You know, it was the R&B chart and colored music.
So that was him just like, I'll redo this song. I'll put Ding-a-ling instead of tambourine in.
Well, I prefer to think of it in the same lineage of, say, Prince's Little Red Corvette. Great songs about a woman's most sensitive organ.
And, well,
that's what it is, you know.
Well, I think I know what a ding-a-ling is, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. And so, you know, my ding-a-ling, little red Corvette, okay, we get where okay, there you go. 50 years of R&B history condensed.
If I listen to two or three, then, Chuck Berry songs today, what should I listen to?
Well, you know, my colleague Greg Kot did a great job in the Tribune yesterday. He pointed out how Brown-Eyed Handsome Man, which is one of the early Chess hits, is really a song about race relations in America. You know, 10 years before Curtis Mayfield, say, is talking about that, or the Staples Singers. And it's a powerful song, or a song like Memphis. Or, you know, there are several Pedal Steel tracks that Chuck recorded with Willie Dixon at Chess Records. And you can hear that he's a virtuoso also on that instrument. But really, you know, the single album to own is called The Great 28, and that's what it is. It's 28 songs that are the one-stop shopping history of the foundation of rock and roll, and they're all brilliant. And, you know, everything from the Ramones to Green Day to all modern rock comes from that.
Born in 1926, died March 18th, 2017, Charles Edward Anderson Chuck Berry. Jim, I just wanted to ask you a couple questions about South by Southwest. Do you have one more minute?
Yeah, of course.
Stay right there. This is WGN. 1:52. Jim DeRogatis gives us a couple more minutes on this, the first day of spring. I'm going to have to play I Wish You Bluebirds in the Spring after the 2 o'clock news, but right now it's...
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny B. Good, who never ever learned to read or write so well, but he could play a guitar just like a ring in a bell. Go, go!
So we go from Chuck Berry sound, although that really is a lot of fun. You know, it happens whenever somebody passes away. Jim, I suddenly remember, oh, yeah, I love that music, or, wow, that's a lot of fun. I should have paid more attention to that music, you know?
Well, the music's immortal. That's the thing. I saw Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeting about how, reminding us that Berry's Johnny B. Goode was one of the songs that was shot into space on a cassette.
I didn't know that. Go humanity!
You got to tell a distant alien civilization what's best about this world. You'd be hard pressed to find something else to do it in 2.5 minutes.
As citizens, as earthlings, each and every one of us should pause and ask ourselves if we're making a contribution so great to civilization that we would actually launch it into space for future civilizations to discover and say, yeah, well, we got that.
Yeah.
I haven't done that yet.
Top that,
Mars.
Here, maybe. I don't know. Not in 2.5 minutes.
Here's you writing about South by Southwest. I thought it was kind of funny. You wrote, the tenor of South by Southwest 2017 can be gleaned from the way it's now described in its official corporate lingo. Quote, the South by Southwest trademark, South by Southwest trademark, conference and festivals celebrate the convergence of interactive film and music industries, March 10th through 19th, 2017. You wrote, in my 26 years as a journalist and critic covering America's best celebration of independent music, this was the first time when music almost seemed like an afterthought.
Yeah, well, it did to the conference organizers, and certainly it does to the brands. You know, since there is no longer a music industry of the sort that launched Chuck Berry, labels like Chess Records, it is now, we had Nile Rodgers, the great super producer and member of Chic, as the keynote address, talking about how the future is with brands. And bragging about how he, you know, happily works with Nike and luxury automobile companies. You know, I don't think that's why Chuck Berry wrote his music. He was very happy to get paid for it. Obviously very mercenary. But, you know, it comes from a place of art. And it's always a bucket of ice water in the face, John. You know, you go to these panels all day where you have people scheming about how to best market music as an accoutrement to your urban consumer lifestyle. And then there are 2,000 bands that have traveled from around the world on their own dime, hoping to get heard. I saw a young surf band from Peru. You know, these kids were 25, and they stripped down to their swim trunks and played this amazing set of very 2020 futuristic surf, but drawing on the Beach Boys and the Ventures, and it was, you know, it's phenomenal. So the music always leaves me extremely uplifted while I come home a little sick to my stomach about the industry that sells it.
I got less than 60 seconds left, but what's the name of that band?
Mundaka, M-U-N-D-A-K-A.
Yes. In your column, you wrote a piece about some of the music that did inspire you, and I have to tell you, I laughed out loud at the name of one of the groups.
Let's Eat Grandma?
Yes!
They sound nothing like that. We're talking about two teenage British women who make this incredibly Spartan, minimalist, beautiful pop music.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I thought
there's got to be a story there, and I'll interview them on Sound Opinions, and we'll get it.
Yeah, no kidding. I wonder how the grandma feels about that. I mean, how did somebody not take that name already? It's so awesome. Let's Eat Grandma.
Let's Eat Grandma.
That's the name of the band. Give me one other band name that maybe I should surf for to listen to that was at South by Southwest.
I saw this wonderful kind of combination of Easter Mass and Satanic Ritual by a Los Angeles musician named Sorn, S-O-R-N-E.
Yeah, right.
And that was cool. I needed a little of that.
Read him in the Sun-Times.
Not anymore. No, it's been 7.5 years since I left the Sun-Times.
Pardon me, I need to take that off your resume, don't I?
There you go. Sound Opinions on WBEZ.
Thanks a lot, Jim, for your time.
You betcha.
Jim DeRogatis, can you tell I've been away a little bit? It's 1:57. We always do Trump talk on this show as is necessary in the 2 o'clock hour. Otherwise, if you start, I'm afraid you never stop. So we reserve that conversation for 2 o'clock, and with the ongoing hearings today, we have a lot to say after the news.